Thanks for downloading this episode of Historical Hot or Not. Just a quick note to say, I sat down to edit this on the night of the Oscars, and as I'm editing the episode, I hear me in the past say, oh, I stayed up last night to watch the Oscars, which made me realise that I've sat on this episode for 12 months. I could have not mentioned this at the beginning, except I then do go on to talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once, winning all the Oscars, which was 12 months ago. So if you hear that and think, but hang on, it was Oppenheimer that won all those awards. Yeah, it's because this is a very old episode, but it's fine. The banter and lols feel as fresh as they did in March 2023. Or not. You be the judge. Enjoy.
They might be a Viking or a Saxon or a Roman, but tell me, do you like them? Would you sex them? Would you bone them? Would you go to bed with King Ethelred? Would you bonk William the Conqueror up in the sheets with Samuel Pepys? Mussolini was a meanie, led a fascist insurrection, but does he make you creamy? Does he give you an erection? Would you pork Richard the Duke of York? Does a boner start when you think of Bonaparte? Are you sexually aroused at the thought of Pol Pot? Historical Hot or Not?
Hello and welcome to Historical Hot or Not, the only history podcast that looks at the life and times of history's most celebrated figures and asks, yes, but would you? It's the only podcast that explains the economic theory behind Adam Smith's free hand of the market and then uses his other hand to sexually gratify our private equity zones. Kath, when these intros get too convoluted, do stop me. I am your co-host, Aidan McCaffrey. I am not a historian, and this is...
Catherine Mather, and I am also not a historian, but we are comedians, and we are horny for history. And that's why we've decided to get together and talk about history and objectifying those people.
It's not even the history of sex, is it? I mean, that could be a whole interesting podcast. It's much less interesting and much less educational than that.
It is. I also like that Aidan has just told me that he's been up watching the Oscars last night. I feel like that has very much come through in your delivery of the intro today. Just fatigued. Right, let's just fucking do this one, shall we?
That's just the fatigue I have with life. I actually was thinking of delivering the intros in a less big manner going forward, because often what happens is I try and regulate the audio level to what my volume is, but it's way too big at the start. And then I just sort of slope off a bit to my normal volume. So then you've got to like manipulate the volume for different sections of speech. So I'll give it a more casual intro. A bit less like I'm presenting the top 40 countdown on Radio 1. And a bit more like it's a Sunday morning. You're in your bath towel. And you just want to listen to some relaxing historical sex talk. That kind of vibe,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, but now you'll never host the top 40. And I just think that's a shame. You know, you need to show them what you got, Aidan.
Well, yeah, but if I have to submit some kind of recording to be top 40, I'll send them one of the early episodes.
But if
Jazz FM want me, I send them one of the new, I've just spent all night watching a Hollywood awards ceremony recordings where I'm basically almost asleep. That's how I'll do it.
Yeah, no, I respect that you're showing them you've got range.
We've got lots of range, Kath. How are you anyway? How are you doing, Kath?
I'm great.
We usually do the how are you chat pre-episode, but pre-episode was largely taken up by technical catastrophes.
On my end, as always. I'm good, thank you, Aidan. I celebrated International Women's Day by getting a car and immediately just stalling it repeatedly in the middle of the main road. And let me tell you, you know how tightly wound the people of London are?
Yeah.
It is not better when you put them in a tin can that cannot move anywhere because it's too busy. They were furious with me. The people of London hate me even more now. And they're all honking at me. And I'm suddenly like, what is honking doing? Like, it's... I'd have just thought I was doing absolutely fine here if you weren't there. to be meh, meh.
It's like, I mean, it's like, have you ever seen like an Indian traffic jam where nothing's moving and then everyone starts honking?
Mm-hmm.
It's not made the situation better. If anything, it's just made it infinitely worse.
Exactly. I hate people. As well, a lot of men have been like, oh, do you get cryy when you get overwhelmed in the car? No, I get angry. I'm going to be one of those people that you read about in the news that just like has a bat in the car. And when someone honks me, I'll just get out of it and smash it up. I won't. I will not Britney Spears it, but I already feel like doing that.
Kath, my policy in terms of promoting this podcast is whatever works. And if the thing that sends us viral is dash cam footage on TikTok of you getting out of a car with a baseball bat and smashing up a Land Rover, I'm fine with that. Just make sure if that gets uploaded, you tag it. Hashtag hot not pod. That's all I'm asking.
I will. And then I can't imagine I'd be able to make a very quick getaway through London.
That's the thing, because I feel like well, I'd never do that because I'm a coward. But if I did, I'd be like, do I have a getaway here? Is there a nice runway of clear road in front of me? If so, give me the bat. I need to go and smash up that Kia Sportage that's honking at me from behind.
Exactly. What you want to do is, if you're trying to make a quick getaway, get into a vehicle that is registered in your name to your home address, and they'll never be able to find you.
Exactly.
How have you been, Aidan?
Okay. I had a meltdown earlier today because I went out. So I went to buy some eggs.
Right.
I feel like eggs is coming up a lot on this podcast because we met up in Manchester and just ate loads of eggs.
We did, yeah.
I like eggs. I went to buy some eggs. I got back, put my keys down, blah, 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 had dinner. Then I had to go. I said I was going to go to my mum's this afternoon. So I got my shoes on to go to my mum's. Couldn't find my keys. And I had a proper full-on, I have early onset Alzheimer's, like proper hating myself. Why can I never remember anything? What have I done with them? I mean, I looked everywhere, Kath. Like I was turning up the sofa cushions. I was looking on the bookshelf. I started to think, what if I just did something really dumb? Like, you know, if you try to do two things at once and then you find out you've like put the milk on the key shelf and then you've put the keys in the fridge. I was like, did I do that? Because I remember bringing the milk in. Hadn't done that. I turned over every stone. It was insane. I then convinced myself that I'd left the keys in the door outside. Someone had then locked it, me in and taken the keys with the plan that they would come back later when I was sleeping and either steal my car with the keys or just let themselves into the house and steal some stuff.
And I was going to say kill you, but sure, steal your stuff.
And then I started to get upset that I had to make a decision then because of that. Well, do I just ring someone to change the locks? I have to do that. Otherwise, the person's going to come in tonight. And then I was getting upset about that. It was insane. I was also locked in. So I texted my wife and said, do we have a key and have a spare key? She was like, well, no, not really. And anyway, I hung up. I was upset. And then I don't know why I did it, but I sort of was just looking in the corner of the kitchen. And there's like a series of hooks. And the only keys we put on these hooks, you know, like the electricity meter keys or the gas meter key.
Mm-hmm.
And my keys were just there. And that sounds like a really obvious place to have left my keys on a hook with other keys on it. But I never...
Yeah, in the key hook corner.
Yeah, the famous key hook that the house arrived with. The thing is, Kath, I never put my keys there. I never put my keys on those hooks. So therefore, I would never think... I was literally looking inside a box of tea bags for my keys. That's how insane I got. And I never thought to look on the actual key hooks in the corner of the kitchen. And it was also one of those things where just finding them reset my entire emotional balance like that.
You know?
It's just like the whole panic was over. I don't have early onset Alzheimer's. And I literally got on with the rest of the day with a whistle in my voice and a spring in my step.
I mean, to be fair, that sounds ridiculously stupid, Ed, and very foolish of you.
I honestly think I'm more tired from the emotional expenditure I did there than the fact that I stayed up till 4 p.m. to watch 4 a.m. to watch the Academy Awards, and then I only had about 4 or 5 hours sleep. It was much more draining there. I was literally thinking thoughts like, this is the rest of my life. This is the rest of my life, forgetting things like this. Yeah, just locked in. My wife's not going to let me out. She's going to hear about this and just move in somewhere else. And I've just got to then figure out, how long can I make the food in this house survive? Can I eat two cats? How much meat do they have on them? How long is that going to keep me going?
Well, one thing, because this story did begin with eggs, and I've been to 3 shops today to try and find eggs. Can't. And I was thinking, it is insane, the food shortages that we have now. Because I was at a gig earlier this week. Not earlier this week, it's literally Monday. Last week, I was at a gig last week. And it was this woman's 32nd birthday, and her friends had bought her a punnet of beef tomatoes because vegetables are rare now. And isn't
they'd all clubbed
in
£10 each.
Yeah. we're doing rationing, but there is no war. We just fucked ourselves.
That's
like
amazing.
You did with your keys.
That's really good. I like that. They're very considerate friends. I'd love it if somebody did that for me. I do tend to find though, in these kind of shortages, I mean, maybe it's different in London, the kind of places that have shortages are supermarkets where people panic buy. So I remember when the toilet roll thing happened in the pandemic, there's no supermarket within 50 miles of me that had toilet roll, but all you had to do was just go to a corner shop and they had them. And there was something weird about it. Was the mentality of people who think that the local Asda is the only kind of place in human existence where you can buy food and household goods. And then everyone else was just like, well, I'll just try the newsagents down the road. And it's just like piled. It's literally like pyramids of toilet rolls in there because no one's thinking of actually going into those places. So, I don't know. Maybe try that. Try your local fruit and veg merchant. That's what I say.
Well, I think it was the strangest thing that people, that toilet roll was the thing that people were like, well, this is irreplaceable. This is a thing that we could not fashion out of anything at all that we could just kind of find lying around. Yeah. Whereas food, oh no, food, that's fine. Got loads of food everywhere.
Kathy, say that. Have you ever tried to wipe your ass with a newspaper?
I have.
It's horrendous.
It is, yeah. I'm not saying that that's like my go-to, Aidan. I'm just saying that I reckon I could probably do without toilet paper longer than I could do without tea or eggs.
I couldn't go without tea, but I also am so well stocked on tea. I think I'd see out a potential tea shortage fine, as long as I was willing to transfer briefly to say Redbush or decaffeinated. I've got all sorts of tea in my house. I will say, actually, the deprivation of tea might be a theme on today's subject, Kath.
Well, shall we tell these good people the premise of our podcast and then get the fuck on with it? So, historical hot or not, we have a cheeky little look at the eTrost app each week, or whatever interval these podcasts are coming out in. We will suggest a potential suitor to one another. This week, Aidan will be suggesting, I assume, a gentleman to me, although it's not always that heteronormative. And if I decide that, yeah, I would fuck him, then they'll go on the bay, you'll tap that astray. And if not, well, then we can all just forget they ever existed.
If you want to play along with this, we're going to start by, I'm going to show Catherine the subject profile picture on the historical dating app eTrost. You can have, there's a link to this photograph in the podcast notes. Play along. We'll make an initial superficial assessment, and then we'll move on to the character assessment. Oh yeah, I need to send you the thing. I'm so tired. Why did I do this to myself? I even know the Oscars is silly. I know it's dumb. I just really like films. I really like things that celebrate films. And I kind of knew my favourite film of last year, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. I kind of knew it was probably going to sweep the board. So I thought, yeah, I'm going to stay up and watch it. I knew I had a podcast recording today. I knew I had a podcast recording tomorrow. I know I've got 8 hours of office work in between that. I didn't care. Why? Because I hate myself.
Hey.
Right, I've just sent you a link. Sorry, I should have sent you a photo, but fuck you, Kath. You can click on a link.
I can click on a link, don't you? Oh, okay.
So, Kath, this is Norman. He is 65, and he is from Glasgow.
Ah, see, and I quite like the Scottish accent. So this is a photograph in sepia, I think they call it. If I had to describe him, first two words I thought were silver fox.
Yes.
He's got hair on top, but it's kind of thinning. But the beard really is where it's at. That's quite a lovely thing.
He's got a big white bushy beard, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. It's very present. That's the word I wanted to use. He's got sad eyes, I think. He seems to be wearing a suit, which I assume means that he's quite well to do. It looks dirty, but I think that's the photograph rather than him. And I mean, that looks to me like a bow tie, but sort of how I do it up, because I can't really do a bow tie up. Yeah, incorrectly.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, he is old enough to be my father. And for that reason, it is currently a no.
Ah.
But that's not, that's not a reflection on how he looks. He's a good 60-odd-year-old. Just, you know, I do like people a little more age-appropriate.
Kath, you should have watched the Oscars. There were so many fit 65-year-olds. It was mental. Because I was like Googling, hang on, how old is she now? Like Sigourney Weaver would appear. I'd be like, fucking hell, she's still hot. 73, Kath. Mental.
What?
Yeah, Michelle Yeoh is like 61. She looks about
Jesus
40.
Christ.
Yeah, but there was loads of, they kept bringing people on at Halle Berry, 55. Insane. It's just like, didn't realise I was into sexagenarian women, but turns out after watching the Oscars, I absolutely am. But Kath, at least based on appearance, you're not into this sexagenarian man. I actually think he is quite good looking. I think he's, I thought he had quite piercing eyes, but it's funny you're saying he has sad eyes. I think I'm drawn to his eyes, probably because I have sad eyes as well. Do you know what I mean? It's like I'm actually just seeing my own sadness at the state of the world reflected back at me. But yeah, no.
A kindred spirit.
Do you know what, actually? Before we carry on, I didn't think to look for a picture of him when he was young, but I'm fairly sure there isn't one. Oh, let's have a look. Yeah. He's actually the kind of person who's not much on him online.
Ah, nice.
So actually, if you Google, he's called Norman Kerr. If you Google Norman Kerr Young, there's only like 15 results. And the only result for him is that picture of him as a relatively older man. But anyway, let's get into his life. According to Wikipedia, Norman Shanks Kerr was born in Glasgow, Scotland on the 17th of May, 1834 to Alexandra Kerr, a merchant and ship owner, and Helen Nee Shanks Kerr, who was a woman. Yeah, so you were right, actually. I think they are well to do. And if you're a merchant and a ship owner, you're going to have some of those,
Dollar bills?
Did Scotland have its own currency back then? I don't know.
I don't know. Sorry, I missed the year because I was looking up Norman Kerr Young. And what's come up is someone who looks like probably could have done a school shooting. That is the first one. The second image is the one that you've sent me. The third one seems to be a sort of religious picture of a dying man being wheelbarrowed, and then number four is a gravestone. So I just felt like people needed to know that that's
There is some weird stuff on here. There's also
what
like
time
a
period is he again?
He was born in 1834.
Okay.
So he is a Victorian gentleman. Norman became a doctor of medicine and a master of surgery after graduating in 1861 from the University of Glasgow. He worked as a journalist for the Glasgow Mail. From an early age, he developed an interest in the effects of alcoholism, joining temperance groups such as the Coffee Tavern Company of Glasgow. He was the first secretary of the Glasgow Abstainers Union, and he organised the first meeting of the United Kingdom Alliance in Manchester. According to the Lost Hospitals of London, he was the honorary consulting physician of the Dalrymple House for Inebriates. calf. Do you like it when a lover gets too much into one thing? would this annoy you? Would you be saying to him, look, Norman, this is all great, all this temperance stuff, but maybe like throw some darts in there or something? Mix it up. Yeah. Have more than one hobby.
Go on, go to the pub, lighten it. Oh, no, wait, sorry, you don't like that. I guess if it's something I'm interested in as well, I don't mind. But yeah, I think I am that partner, to be honest. unfortunately, I have like three interests and that's it.
Maybe. That is two more than this guy, though.
Well, yeah, that's comedy, Tetris and knitting are my interests. But yeah, I think if it's, because temperance, it's quite judgmental, isn't it, I find. Like, I understand that alcoholism is a disease and it's good that they had a hospital for them to help these people. You know, addiction is a serious matter, it's a medical issue. But if in order to stop that happening, you're stopping everyone from having a drink, well, that seems a bit shitty. Lighten up, Norm, have a bit of fun.
Well, it's interesting, this issue, I think, because we have the benefit of hindsight to an extent, which we know it doesn't work. Like, it never took off in Britain. I think had it have worked in America, then maybe it would have taken off here. But because it didn't, it just was an absolute disaster. It just, you can't stop people drinking. And if you try, you just create a criminal underworld that will service that need. But I sort of have some sympathy with the temperance movement, because I think the reason it cropped up was because cities at the time were such horrible, dirty places of like overpopulation and bad sanitation. And, you know, it was lots of poor people just crammed into slums. And I don't know, I think like, I'm not really explaining this very well, but I think the culture around what we think of cities as good things now, at least I think we do. I do. I'm a big fan of London. You live in London. I think you like London.
I do.
But they just weren't seen as good places back then. They were just seen as horrible and chimneys spewing black smoke into the air and street urchins everywhere. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't. I think sort of the idea of the public house overflowing with drunkards was sort of seen as part of this. So, and as someone who tries elimination diets and did go about 6 or 7 years without having any alcohol, this part, I just think I look back then, and even though I know, yeah, temperance is a bad idea, I feel like if I was there then, I probably would have been like, yeah, temperance, this is a good idea. This is like self-improvement or something. But hey, maybe that's just me.
I guess as well, if you're living in that level of poverty and a drink is the only thing that makes you forget it briefly, then it seems a bit mean to take that away from people. But then it also does come down to sort of self-regarding and other-regarding acts, doesn't it? So if you get drunk and fuck up your liver, that's just you. But if you're getting drunk, fucking up your liver and stealing from people and hitting people, well, that starts to affect other people, and then it's an issue. So it is a very murky one. One thing that I would like to say, entirely unrelated to this deep dive on alcoholism that we're doing, is that I absolutely adore how he's like, yeah, I just became a doctor, surgeon, journalist. They're like, the amount of study and unpaid internships that you would have to do to become one of those now is too many. Whereas in the Victorian times, it was like, yeah, I'll put my fingers up a fanny. I could get a baby out of there, no problem. I'm a doctor. I'm a surgeon as well. I'll write about it, journalist.
There'll be more about sticking fingers up fannies later, as well as drinking. There's lots of interesting life. according to the British Journal for the Study of Inebriety and the Times, as in the Times is also one of the sources, Kerr moved to London and joined the Church of England Temperance Society, speaking at their annual conference, and he supported the British Women's Temperance Association. He was also a supporter of the Society for Promoting Legislation to Control and Cure Habitual Drunkards, CAF. I'm starting to think that the temperance movement failed in England because there were too many temperance movements. There were too many groups. You know, Are you in the temperance movement? No, I'm the treasurer of the Canine Temperance Association for Dogs Against Drinking. Also, is it me or is the word... I think the word drunkard has too much of a comical association.
Now. Yeah, it does sound quite funny, doesn't it?
I'm sure then it was just something like GPs and public health officials use, but now it just feels like, oh, this guy is an absolute drunkard. He's a legend. No, you might as well call it the Society for Helping Pissheads or the Association for Helping Cider Sponges.
I did watch a very, very long documentary about prohibition. We're talking about 5 hours worth of documentary here. And one of the points that they sort of made was that prior to prohibition, people would, you know, the whole, well, people would drink beer for breakfast. They would, yeah, but it'd be about 2%. And yeah, you could function on it. But then beer started getting stronger. So if you drank the amount of booze that you were drinking when it was 2%, but it's 5%, then it's going to fuck you up. And people just didn't change their drinking habits to accommodate the strength of the alcohol.
That's interesting.
And, yeah, so then therefore people got drunker. And it was largely women who were doing these temperance movements because they were the ones that had to deal with the fact that there was no money to feed the family when he'd gone and drunk it all, and also they were the ones getting hit when they got home. Yes. And from that perspective, yeah, I'd hit booze as well.
I think that's what in my post-Oscar fatigue I was sort of trying to get at when I was talking about, I can see why people at this time viewed booze as this great evil. That 2% thing is interesting. I mean, I only drink session ales before 9 a.m, but after 9 a.m, anything goes.
Yeah, I'm more of a wine drinker myself, but
even before 9 a.m.
Yeah, before breakfast. After that, I go on to the beers, but you got to start strong, taper off.
Sure. What would you call your temperance society, Kath? And I think you can just pick a demographic, throw the word temperance in there. You can have like society association. Just like literally, it's like a, you know, it's like a fruit machine. You press a button and a different one for each comes down. You've got yourself a temperance society.
All right, then. So how about old Kathy's?
This is starting to sound like a pub.
Old Kathy's Drunkard Disgust League.
Drunkard Disgust League. That's quite good. I like it.
Yes.
I came up with the Gentlemen's Union of Chamomile Converts, or the Society for the No Longer Getting Shit-Faced, or the 9 p.m. Club in reference to bedtime.
Perfect.
According to Martha Allen's 1900 writing, Alcohol, a Dangerous and Unnecessary Medicine, How and Why What Medical Writers Say, which was a temperance publication, which you can probably figure out from the ludicrous name, Norman Kerr was even against the use of alcohol in medicine, even though when he was a resident of America, people were unwilling to use him because he wouldn't prescribe booze. I think that's quite funny. Here's a plaster. What the fuck? Can I get a second opinion? Where's the normal guy? Oh, he's off today. Kath, this is like how you had to switch GP whenever you're denied medical marijuana for mild complaints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, listen, I've got this paper cut. I'm going to need a spliff, baby. How did you get in here?
I've had my second headache in 12 months. I'd like an ounce of hash, please.
Thanking you.
According to the records of the Borough of Marylebone, he came after churches giving lectures on the ancient use of non-alcoholic wine in historical churches. Kath, this guy wouldn't prescribe the blood of Christ to a sinner. He's hardcore. You can imagine him there. When you transubstantiate the wine into the blood of Christ, could you use something a bit lighter, like, say, Ribena? I also can't do a Scottish accent, so I'm doing my generic posh voice whenever I do an impression of Norman Kerr. Kerr was not just a mouthpiece. He was influential in getting laws changed to help inebriates. According to the British Journal of Addiction, Kerr's efforts to set up reform houses for drunks rather than just throwing them in jail helped result in the Inebriates Act of 1898, which encouraged local authorities to set up state-certified reformatories to treat habitual drunkards. Kath, how much do you drink, if you don't mind me asking? Are you an odd tipple lass? Or are you one of those people who has to wear a hoodie when they take their weekly empties to the Asda glass bins and no one can see their no one can see their 20 bottle shame?
No, I don't actually drink much anymore. If you'd have asked me that 10 years ago, it would have been a very different answer. But yeah, it's just, I realised that it makes me feel rubbish and I don't really like it. And then it's very difficult to answer the question, why am I doing it, isn't it, when that's the case?
The whole weekly empties thing, because I only actually empty all the glass bottles every 3 or 4 months because we don't drink that much. But yeah. You always look like you've been getting smashed on the reg whenever you empty them. It doesn't matter whether you're doing it every, you're emptying those glass bottles every 3 days or every 3 months. You're still just emptying empty bottles of booze into the biggest brown bin anyone has ever seen in their life.
Yeah, the echo chamber. Very loud.
Yes. According to the New South Wales Evening News, Kerr was also critical of habitual and overuse of narcotics, despite recognising their medical benefits in limited quantities. Kathy, you're a massive drug user. Listeners can't hear you, but you currently have a spliff in your mouth, a belt around your arm, and a little Bunsen burner slowly cooking up some lovely heroin in a spoon. So the next bit you might find off-putting. Basically, he didn't want people to do drugs either. He also had a pop at caffeine consumption, saying, both tea and coffee are used in excess. I found a patient insensible in her room one day who had drunk nothing but tea, but she had consumed a pound of tea in the day. All right, Kerr, you can take my booze, you can take my morphine, but you can prize my PG tips from my cold, dead British hands over my cold, dead body.
Yes, and my cold, dead cup of tea.
Yeah. I don't know how they do things up there in Scotland, but in England, we hate ourselves and we drink a lot of tea to make up for it. Yeah, not touching it.
You know what? To be fair, it sounds like his heart's in the right place. Like, I like him.
I
guess you could view him as a bit of a puritanical dickhead, because he is, but he is right as well.
Yes. Like vegans. We all hate them. They're not wrong.
Exactly. That's why people don't like them, because they're right.
Puritanicalism. It's the key to a lot of bugbears in society. Like, if you think about the whole woke versus anti-woke, or even the PC versus anti-PC debate that has evolved from, it sort of stems from that. That just some people just don't like being told what to do they?
No.
One of my brothers is not particularly political. He's not woke or anti-woke, but I've noticed it's the puritanical thing. It's someone saying, this is what you should, that it just really, really gets to him, really fucks him off. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, yeah, I think that's sort of key to a lot of things. I think this guy, we'll get into this a bit later, but I think he was quite polite. I don't think he was like, he was sort of campaigning for it, but I don't think he was necessarily shoving it in people's face. And the way he did popularize, we'll get into it. I'm sort of like preempting things I'm about to say. Kerr wrote a paper called What Shall We Do With Alcoholic Inebriates Apparently Insane? I like the title of that paper because I think if that had been published in the 1990s, an acid house outfit would have definitely named their first album Alcoholic Inebriates Apparently Insane. It sounds like a great rave band name from the Madchester scene.
Yeah, Apparently Insane would be in brackets.
Yeah, exactly. Or they'd be called AIAI, and people would be like, oh, is that a reference to computers? And they'd be like, nah, it's Alcohol Inebriates Apparently Insane, because we're mad for it. Way. Kath, one of the reasons I wanted to cover Norman Kerr is that I think his attitudes do seem modern, even by our woke 2020 cancel culture vulture standards. Have you heard of Florence Maybrick?
No.
She was an 1890s woman who was accused of murdering her husband, James Maybrick, a hypochondriac who regularly took prescription chemicals containing poisonous elements. Yeah, the case was a cause célèbre at the time, with the public feeling she had been falsely accused. The government commuted her death sentence, but she still spent several years in prison for a crime for which she was never charged. According to a contemporary edition of the St. James's Gazette, Kerr wrote a letter concerning the medical evidence in the trial, saying, justice will not be satisfied until Mrs. Maybrick receives a free pardon.
Mm.
It's good, isn't it?
Well, it was using it for good then, I guess.
Yeah, he's intervening. According to a contemporary edition of the Birmingham Daily Post, in 1892, Kerr co-founded the Church Sanitary Association with the aims of ensuring to everyone pure air, pure water, a wholesome dwelling, and surrounding safeguarded from preventable diseases. And also a free edition of the All Saints hit single, Pure Shores. I just wanted to put that last bit on the spot because
really?
I thought pure air, pure water, pure shores. According to a contemporary edition of the Morning Post, in an 1881 outbreak of typhus in Marylebone, he urged the local vestry, which was the contemporary equivalent of a town council, to remove the insanitary conditions which have hitherto fostered the disease, condemning the state of the local slums, in which he criticised the construction of houses, the proximity of toilet to bedrooms, the ventilation, and then one instance saying, the sewage too is defective.
Wow, even the sewage is defective here.
I'm so glad you picked up on that, because when I read that, I was like, hang on, does he mean the sewage system? He doesn't, does he? He's saying the poo is defective, right?
I mean, given their diet, yeah, probably.
I think defective is an odd word to describe sewage, because defective implies a mechanical failure, like a mechanism that stopped working. Yep. Now, maybe there was something about 19th century feces that we're not aware of. Like maybe 19th century poop had clockwork implements, you know?
And maybe for steampunk.
Yeah, yeah, steampunk poo or steampunk shite. You can imagine him saying, as we know, the fecal matter has a series of cogs inside which power mechanical legs, which allow the turd to independently locate the nearest sewer system and make itself scarce. Well, obviously, that has failed the people of Marylebone in this instance.
Yeah. Well, again, it sounds like he knew what he was talking about in a way that other people clearly didn't. Or maybe didn't give a shit about whether they were keeping people sleeping next to a toilet. Just
they
forever.
Didn't give a defective shit. Okay.
No, they did not.
No, but this is the thing. It's coming from a medical point of view. Alcohol does damage you if you drink it in excess, doesn't it?
Especially, to be fair, I've slept next to many a toilet because of alcohol, but maybe not in quite the same way as these poor people.
Yeah, exactly. Living in a slum in which your pillow is just another man's excrement, not good for your health, not good for your lungs. No. He knows this. Here's the thing I like about him, and this is what I was getting at earlier when I was saying I think his approach to it's fairly polite. He was very polite in the urging of the vestry to fix the sanitation issue, addressing them as your honorable board and apologizing, the urgency of this case must be my excuse for thus trespassing on your courtesy and forbearance. I like it. Excuse my impertinence, but there appears to be some street urchins wading through their own shite on Charles Street. I don't suppose you could do something about it. No worries, if not, good day to you, sir.
I'm so sorry for interrupting your nice meal, but thousands are dying preventably because you can't be asked to put anything back into society, you awful fucking leech.
Imagine if that's how the left spoke to Tory. Like now when we criticise the Tories, it's like, fuck these cunts, hashtag fuck the Tories, hashtag fuck these cunts. Whereas I feel like in the 19th century, it's like, excuse me, people have noticed, but you've killed quite a lot of people during your 13 years of government through a mismanagement of the social and economic levers of the country. But I can see you're busy, so maybe I'll come back later. Apologies for the interruption.
So you still get that now, though, don't you? Like when in the newspapers, people get into trouble for calling Tories cunts. But they'll be calling them a cunt because they killed thousands of people. And in the newspaper, it's just like, how dare they say horrible things to these people who, have killed thousands and kill more.
It's about a standard of decorum. It's like in Parliament, you can't accuse someone of being a liar, I don't think.
Kicked out of it so quickly.
like a principle, you've never heard Keir Starmer call Johnson a liar, even though it's so on record how obvious his lies are. You know, you never hear Starmer go, this government has given us nothing but lies for the last several years of them being in power. That's my Starmer impression.
That is quite good. I don't like him either, to be fair.
He's a vegetarian. According to Wikipedia, what? Crowe is a vegetarian and an advocate for vegetarianism, often cooking for large crowds to demonstrate the value of meatless meals. According to the Kilburn Times, he cooked up such a meal for 100 persons at the Walmer Castle Cafe Tavern. According to records in the Borough of Marylebone, he cooked a vegetable stew for 250 poor people. I like that. He's killing two birds with one stone. He's saying, hey, vegetarian foods are right, and he's doing it by feeding poor people.
Well, it's very honourable. I like that he's done that. Not every meal has to have meat in it, does it? You know, no. But it does seem a little bit mean telling people who are literally begging in the street, be a vegetarian. Like, listen, pal, I'm going to eat whatever the fuck I can get my hands on. I'm not,
they
not really
be
counting it. Yeah.
I mean, if you'd present a very lightly charred cow to them that had barely been cooked properly, they would have eaten it. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And my poo is defective as fuck. Just get something in my belly.
I'm doing those white poos that dogs used to do.
That's how defective it is. I've not seen one of those in 25 years. I don't miss them.
Yeah. No, that's because people look after the dogs and feed them properly now.
Was that it? I thought it was like because no one picked up the poo, some kind of something in the air just made them go white after a while.
No, I think it was that they were getting fed shit rather than dog food.
Yeah, cheap pizzas from Asda. Mm-hmm. Calf. Kerr's never-ending train of modern attitudes did not end at animals. According to an 1878 edition of The Times, a motion was proposed to exclude women practitioners from the British Medical Association following the election of Francis Hogan and Mrs. Garrett Anderson, saying Dr. Norman Kerr opposed the motion. He considered that holding this opinion, he should be doing a mean, unmanly, and unjust act if he remained silent. There was no sex in art and science. In reply to the suggestion that some medical men objected to discuss questions with medical women, he urged that such men were inconsistent inasmuch as they treated patients in the presence of a nurse and made no scruple of modesty in other respects. It was not until 1892 that women were admitted to the British Medical Association. This cat is ahead of his time, like a tabby riding a DeLorean into the year 3000. That's got to be an office opener, right, Kath?
Yeah, it is a bit, actually. Got a slight wide on now. That's great. I mean, good, yeah, he seems very ahead of his time in all regards. Please don't be like, and he also had slaves.
That's the risk with this podcast, isn't it, Kat? I will say...
It really is.
I know, I won't say that till the end, actually, because it spoils attention. one of my favourite things is exposing the weird inconsistency in, like, small-c conservative attitudes to things. Like, he's right. It's like, well, you'll speak these things in front of a nurse, a female nurse. Why were you worried about speaking in front of a female doctor? And it just exposes how it's just, like, a pathetic protectionism of... Mm. Whatever thin veil of power they appear to have. You know, we discussed this recently in the one episode we did about Mother Teresa. The Catholics are so obsessed with gays and with homosexuality and sex outside of marriage, but there's so much nonsense in the Bible they don't care about, like planting two types of seeds together and wearing two types of cloth. And I kind of like that. It's just like all this stuff's nonsense. It's just people being dicks.
It is. And as you well know, I work in a hospital by day because comedy is going really well. And even now, it is mental how often people will just split it as, oh, the man's the doctor, the woman's the nurse. And that is not the case. There are plenty of female doctors and male nurses. And it's really odd and very revealing of society still that people still think that.
Have you heard of that test people do where they say,
oh, is it the surgeon story?
Yeah, and the man's in a car crash, they take the son to the hospital and the doctor says, I can't work on this person, it's my son. Well, what's happening there?
Yeah, it takes people ages, doesn't it, to work it out.
And the idea is, if you don't immediately figure out that it's his mum, you're a misogynist. Well, or you have some kind of vague misogyny. I fucking failed this totally, Kath. My wife did it on me. she did it. And I was just there for ages scratching my head, like, but the dad's died, so who could it be? I don't understand. I thought I was a... Kath, I thought I was one of the good guys. I'm not. I'm a bad man. Did not occur to me. Go on.
I also did the same thing.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It's internalised misogyny.
Yeah. You're as woke as they get. But you just have, like, I don't know. Yeah, internalised misogyny. You just have assumptions. Yeah. Playing doctors and nurses in the playground. And those things kind of are just buried into your skull. And it doesn't matter how many Guardian op-eds you read. It's still kind of in there, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, and this is wildly off now, but, well, not really. You know, when people make a fuss about, well, I don't see why there has to be so many gay people on television, or, oh, I don't see, you know, what the problem is that the only roles that brown actors get are terrorists or whatever, you know, like all of that shit. But it really does. It seeps in, doesn't it? If that's every... Yeah. Portrayal of you, so if pretty much every doctor that you see as a child on television is a man, then it does, you absorb it as a kid, and you're not going to want to become a doctor, or you're not going to think you could become a doctor as a lady, because, well, you don't see them.
Charlie Fairhead, you've got a lot to answer for.
Anyway, I should probably go back into comedy mode and not fucking preachy.
Well, you know, Kath, I remember after we did the Margaret Thatcher episode, and I have a bit of a hang-up about... I always worry that if I'm just having a left-wing rant, I just think there's so much of it on the internet. I don't... Mm-hmm. No one needs that from me. So I honestly thought, like, oh, this episode's not going to be that good because we just started ranting about it. Honestly, I actually think it's one of the best ones we did. I mean, there were the factors. I think the Maron opening that we did which was just random. It was just about what would our roles be in the apocalypse. I just think that was very funny. I thought, like, you'd written a good script on her, and we sort of did rant for a bit, but then we pulled back. And I think that is important because people need to know who we are, what we stand for,
yes,
all that kind of thing. So I'm sort of a bit happier about just the occasional rant, the old Ronald rant.
Oh, are you? Anyway, or the old Norman Kerr, if you will.
Indeed. According to an 1881 edition of The Times, he supported the early closing movement, limiting the hours of labour in shops to 12 daily, writing, "I have a very strong conviction on medical grounds that the present hours during which shop assistants have to work are excessive and prejudicial to health." Again, I think he's sort of on the right side of a lot of issues. 12 hours daily, it seems mental to us now. But, you know, I am happy for I'd rather progress was quick, but slow progress is still progress. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know what it was before this, if there were, it was like 16 or something insane. 12 is better.
Yeah. It does always make me laugh when you've got all of these people, these boomers and people in the middle age on Twitter being like, whoa, bloody health and safety. And you're like, oh, okay, so you want to be working 12 hours a day. They have to restrict it to 12 hours. Like, yeah, you'd totally be happy with being in the fucking mill. Yeah. For 18 hours.
What do they want? Do they want to work in one of those like 1920s factories where there's a sign above the door that says 4 days since last fatality? You know what I mean?
Yeah, where everyone's like that zoo in Tiger King where most of the keepers are missing limbs. That's what they want.
Huge bite marks out of their thighs. Yeah, exactly. So it's personal life. He was married to an Irish chick called Eleanor Gibson. They had a son and four daughters. She died in 1892, and he remarried in 1894 to Edith Jane Henderson, who was vice president of the Women's Total Abstinence Union, presumably formed to one-up the Women's Abstinence Union, and presumably later one-upped further by the Women's Total Fucking Abstinence, including from Shandy's Union, and which was itself presumably one-upped later by the Women's We Only Drink From Natural Springs Union.
So his first wife died. Not good a fucking doctor, is it?
You're not going on the biotechnology because you couldn't keep your wife alive forever.
Exactly.
In the last year of his life, it was reported that he was suffering from Bright's disease, bronchitis and diabetes, which makes me wonder. He didn't drink. He didn't eat meat. We never really found out what he was replacing it with. Where's that diabetes come from? Was he just like on a Mars bar only diet? And that's why he developed, like, I don't eat meats, don't drink, but I have 17 Mars bars a day. And as far as I'm aware, that's going to cause no health problems ever.
Well, you've got to enjoy something, haven't you?
Exactly.
I never get that with people who are like, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't eat anything nice. I have each meal is a specific portion. I drink a lot of protein. And I just think, where's the joy? You've got to enjoy something, right? Have a bit of cake.
Kath, you know, do you know that I don't have any refined sugar?
Yeah, because you get scratchy eyes.
Yeah, I get blepharitis. So, I mean, it's technically not true because I usually once every 6 hours I will cave and have a bit of cake. But then I just pay the price for it for the next few days. But I replaced it with those naked bars, those little datey naked bars.
Well, that's the thing. You've found something that you like there, and you've got a medical reason to not eat sugar. Like, I wouldn't eat sugar if my eyes were on fire for 3 days afterwards. I'd probably stop it. But I'm talking about people who just choose it. And I get this being healthy and stuff. Like, of course, be healthy. But fuck me. What's the point in being alive if you're not going to have anything nice?
Yeah, well, because when they're 130, they will dance on our graves, which showed that we died at the age of 57 from blood sugar complications. That's what.
You know what? Either way, it don't make you invulnerable to cars, does it? If you get it, we will die the same.
That's true.
So eat the cake, just not all of the cake.
Yes. According to Wikipedia,
with your eyes.
According to Wikipedia, he died of influenza in Hastings on the 30th of May, 1899, and was buried in Paddington Old Cemetery. Citation needed. did have some wacky beliefs, as you might expect of the 19th century.
Yes, this is the bit that we want.
Yeah. According to the 1894 article, Is Smoking a Disinfectant? Dr. Kerr said that smoke being retained in the mouth has a kind of disinfecting filter through which germs have to pass, and some of which are certainly destroyed or at least deprived of their vitality. So he clearly thought that cigarette smoke acted as a kind of bouncer for your lungs, checking to see if incoming air was clean, if it had the right dress code. One air shows up swaying, you're not coming in here, mate, you've had too much to drink, and you might give us emphysema.
Yeah, no trainers allowed.
Yeah, exactly.
Take that out. But to be fair as well, I can't imagine the air quality living in London was especially good then. So it really doesn't matter if you're smoking or not, does it?
That's true. I actually remember something I was going to say earlier when you were talking about like drinking things at breakfast. I read and would recommend William Hague, yes, the former foreign secretary. He did a really good biography of William Pitt the Younger, and I think it was in that he talks about how he just, Pitt the Younger is like a very intelligent, capable man, but he just seems to be constantly drinking like quite hard spirits. But it talks about how the water wasn't safe at the time, and actually sort of because alcohol was clean, I mean, had a negative effect on you, but it was actually, because it was clean, it was actually quite a preferable thing to drink from your health, because you could drink water and just die of cholera or something insane.
Fuck that.
So Dr. Kerr himself, in attending cases of cholera, always made a point of smoking because of this belief he had that it was like a bouncer for your mouth and your lungs. He wrote on the subject of cholera and having had cholera himself. Yeah, maybe that 20-pack of Benson and Hedges didn't do anything for your shits, Norman. I can only assume Is Smoking a Disinfectant was part of a wider series of Victorian articles, including Wife Slapping, Good for the Lungs, Endorsing Child Labour, Adds 10 Years to Your Life, and Opium Chomping, The Ultimate Vim Boost. And one last note before we make our final decision, Kath. The Society for the Study and Cure of Inebriety, which he founded, still exists today under the name the Society for the Study of Addiction. That was Norman Kerr. Kath, would you let... I can't think of a stupid pun to do with what he did. Would you fuck him? Would you bang Norman Kerr?
Oh, goodness. Well, he seems like a nice man who's just trying to help. He seems like he's got quite a lot going on, so I don't think he'd be around the house much.
He's running 27 temperance groups.
Yes, as well as being a doctor, surgeon, and journalist.
Yes.
In the Victorian times, when everybody was sick and no one could read. Well, so physically, he's not really my thing, but I do like a Scottish accent. And I think his personality would win me round. It's quite endearing that he does seem to care about people, even if it is in the upper class gentleman way of probably thinking he was superior to them. Or maybe not. Maybe he did just... I don't know. He seems to understand things in a way that people didn't back then. And for that reason, I'm a fuck him.
Way! That's why I picked this guy, Kath, because I sort of saw him, was reading about him on Wikipedia, and I thought, oh my God, this guy, by modern standards, like I said, he seems like he actually would be morally sound even now. So I thought,
Hell on Twitter. He'd get hell on Twitter, wouldn't he?
Oh God, yeah. But then I also think, I know, would he encourage it? I don't know. He seems polite. He doesn't seem like the person he doesn't seem like someone who wants a brawl.
Which is why you get one.
But maybe if you engage in any kind of political battle today, it's sort of impossible not to get drawn into that. Do you know what I mean? And maybe in that sense, he's a nice reminder of a time where you could just be someone fighting for a good cause who, I don't know, wouldn't get trolled by flag Twitter for suggesting that maybe women should be allowed to hold stethoscopes.
Yeah, he'd be the kind of person that would share a link to like a coffee morning that they were having to raise funds and awareness for addiction, and then somebody with a dog as their profile picture would just be laying into him and telling him to die.
Yeah, for bringing
that didn't happen.
For bringing his woke coffee nonsense to into their lives.
Yeah. To be fair, he wouldn't be holding a coffee morning, would he, actually?
That's true.
A water morning.
I want to give a shout out to two people. Maxwell, aka on Twitter, Divi by Zero. He's like our first fan, Kath. I think I've mentioned him to you before. He tweets about almost every single episode we do, and he retweets a lot of our stuff. So he's good. And the second person I want to mention is Irina. You know Irina, don't you? Isn't it your friend's wife?
I know Irina.
What's the same?
Girlfriend.
Girlfriend. Irina Stowen, is that her name?
Yeah. Hi, Irina.
Hi, Irina. Just again, just giving you a shout out because you are very good online at helping to promote our podcast. And if you want to be cool, like Irina and Maxwell, then share our stuff. Our preferred things are retweets or sharing the videos we clip of each episode. Just share that to your stories on Twitter so people will follow the link through. It's just a good way to spread the word. And if not, just literally spread the word. And just say to people, listen to this podcast, Historical Hot or Not. It's funny. You learn something and you hear some fun banter from two top up-and-coming UK comedians.
Yes, there is a wonderful story of because we, of course, have branded condoms, Historical Hot or Not branded condoms. I carry a sack of them to gigs to give out sometimes. And I had some...
Like a sort of sexual health Santa Claus.
Yeah, exactly. A horny Santa in June. And I had this sack of condoms on my desk at work in order to give Irina's partner one. And one of the senior doctors walked past and went, "Have you got a bag of condoms?" And I went, "Yeah." And she went, "Nah, fair enough." And just walked on.
Nice.
Entirely normal. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Hey, it's a hospital. It's a castle of health, and you're promoting health, so they cannot complain. I don't think we need to do our shout outs for the what do you call it? Well, you've mentioned the condoms. The address of you saying kofi.com is now baked into the outgoing credits. So I think in this bit we'll just promote like the social media sharing as we have done, and all that leaves is for us to say goodbye. Go off, enjoy a drink, enjoy a cup of tea, enjoy some medical marijuana, but enjoy it in safe, healthy dosages or amounts that Dr. Norman Kerr would be proud of.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Spread the word. Spread your legs.
Goodbye. See you next week, everybody.
Thanks for listening. You have been listening to Historical Hot or Not, written and created by Aidan McCaffrey and Catherine Mather. The podcast art was by our good friend Richard Todd, and our theme music by excellent musician and also good friend David Eagle. We also have music by Ergo Fizmiz, lesser license from the Free Music Archive. If you've enjoyed us and you would like to donate to the cause, we would love you to do that also. You can find us at ko-fi.com/hotnotpod, and you can download bonus episodes of Historical Hot or Not from Acast Plus. The link is available on our Linktree, linktree.com/hotnotpod. Bye!